Welcome back to Out of the Hourglass. I'm your host, Molly Nolan. I am welcoming Jim Bradley, a Nolan Consulting business coach here back on the podcast. Jim joined me last year, 2023, for a lean series talking about different part of the lean improvement process systems. Those are some wonderful episodes, so I would encourage those folks who have not listened to give those a try. Jim is a lean specialist as well as being an NCG coach. But today I'm having him on to talk about a chapter in the management training series that he and Andrew Amrine, another coach from our team, have been piloting with several members. This is about working with managers on different tools about how to become better leaders, how to improve their management style. One of the chapters is building a high-performing team. And this is a big topic. We can't hit it all, obviously, just in one conversation, but I wanted to peel back some areas of the content, talking about different types of teams and highlighting effective team traits and how it all starts with trust. I will lead us off with this quote because I think this really sums up why we're here. In the end, all business operations can be reduced to three words: people, product, and profit. People come first. Unless you have a good team, you cannot do much with the other two. Lee Iacocca. Enjoy the episode. This episode is brought to you by the Sherwin-Williams Company, our premier Grand Summit sponsor and a supporting partner of the Summit member group. All right, let's dive into it. Jim Bradley, welcome back to the podcast. We've missed you on here. How are you?
I'm good, Molly. How are you?
I am doing well. We haven't had you on here since the Lean series that we did, but truth be told, that was a lot of episodes. So you hammered those out period of time.
I had my time, right?
That you was had like your
six
time.
Episodes, six it episodes. Was. But no, it's good to be back. I'm glad. I was happy when you asked me to come back.
It's good to have you. It's good to have you. And I think, you know, we'll do a quick check in here because, well, folks who are listening to this, this will be post Grand Summit. So for our listeners, we have a Grand Summit conference in Savannah, Georgia that has happened at the end of March by this point. Jim and I are recording this the week prior when we're in the final decisions and logistics and prep. So Jim, how's your headspace today?
Oh, I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. So like we've just been in presentation mode for the Grand Summit.
Yeah.
I think it's easier for the coaches, Molly. I think the burden is on you and your team because it's a big event and I don't think people, at least me last year, I didn't realize the amount of work that went into putting that thing together. It's unbelievable. So I think the coaches get off easy. We show up and talk about what we're good at.
It's true. Right? It's true. Yeah. It's, I mean, it's certainly a full team effort. These types of projects or programs don't just come about at the drop of a hat and, you know, by the work of one person. So yeah, it's good. It's kind of cool for us to see our team come together, you know, outside of our normal day-to-day a little bit and pivot and kind of focus in on putting this workshop or this conference together. So thank you to you for leading three sessions out there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Definitely looking forward
good,
to
good,
it.
Good, good. All right. So in addition to coaching clients and prepping for the Grand Summit and leading two field supervisor peer groups, the field generals, you've also been involved recently with Andrew Amrine in piloting a new management training series here at NCG. You're a busy man, my friend.
Yeah, definitely. It's, you know what though, when you're doing the stuff that you like to do, it doesn't feel like it.
Yeah.
You know what
that,
I mean?
That helps. It definitely helps.
So you're talking about, today we're talking about high-performing teams, but like Andrew and I have been working on this for a while, probably coming up on a year, I would say.
Yeah.
And there's cohesiveness there, right? Him and I, it ties into this exact chapter where we meet once a week and then we're working together and there's synergies and like it turned into this management training program series that's a 6-month program for our clients. So we have 12 participants right now going through
Amazing.
It. Yeah. So we're in and month five.
Yeah. So you're near the tail end. I know that this kicked off in the fall. How's it been going so far?
Oh, it's excellent. So we were hoping to get it done before the summit so we can incorporate it. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of learning through this pilot. We got some great clients participating at every level. So we have owners, we have operations, we have administrative, inside planning. And, you know, it's been great because, you know, Andrew and I are trying to figure out the best way to go about this. The feedback coming back from them has been awesome. Right. So the way we do it is the group meets twice a month. And the first one is like facilitation and instructional. We cover a lot of material. And then we use the second meeting for application. You know, so we're assigning a lot of homework. Mm. They are reading a lot. There's a number of books involved, like Extreme Ownership, Crucial Conversations, 5 Dysfunctions of a Team. But it's going well because we see the members, like the light bulbs are starting to go off about how it ties to their work, right? Mm-hmm. And Andrew talks to it very well, but like we try to build this arc of a story. And, you know, so it started with like the foundations of management. Then we go into leading yourself and leading others, right? So getting a good understanding. And that's where like you do some personal inventory of like your style and everything and how to apply it.
Yep.
Then we do some communication, delegation, and then it shifts to the team, right? So building a high performing team. This month's chapter was problem solving, where it's tools that we can use. And then the last chapter, which is in April, is like motivating and coaching. So you can see how the arc of the story kind of ties back. It was the progression of people. You can see that they really tied it together as we went through it.
I love it because I think through a lot of podcast conversations that I have had and my own personal experiences in life, I'm sure you and I have talked about it at some point, like that the term manager is so easily slapped on to so many roles that exist in the world. But what does that actually entail? I mean, I've come across managers in my day-to-day, just, you know, out and about at a restaurant or at a store. And I'm like, that person does not understand what the role of management is. Like there's an entitlement factor sometimes because of so often we slap this title on it, this title on all these roles, right? But what does it actually mean to be a manager, to manager of people? I mean, that is a massive responsibility.
It's exactly. It's a lot of responsibility that like, you know, a lot of people look at it as a title. It's a title, but like the amount of responsibility and whether you're going to excel in that position or not, there's a lot to it. And that's really this management training series. And then this chapter really aligns with that well, right? Because we get tunnel vision and then like we understand that like there's a lot out there that we could be doing differently. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's an incredible amount of responsibility. If anything, during the last year of coaching with Summit members, I would say for me as a coach, the number one problem out there is the gap between an owner and the field, which is your management team, right? Cascading things down and making things happen, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of opportunity there. And I think that's why Andrew and I kind of went down this road of putting this program together.
I love it. So remind me again, how many chapters are in the full series itself?
Six chapters. Yeah.
Okay. And so the building a high performing team is chapter 5?
Chapter four.
So really kind of smack in the middle of this. I just went with Brian and Kevin to the PCA Expo at the end of February, and Brian did a session on building a high performance management team. And it's important to note we're not talking about management team in this conversation. That's a different, there's certainly alignment there.
Yeah.
I mean, we're on that same track, but a management team being, you know, a smaller trusted group versus a large, we're talking about building a high performing team, a high performing organization here, right?
Oh, absolutely. Right. Okay. It's, you know, so there's a lot of synergies with Brian's presentation that he did at the PCA. He laid it out beautifully with the different steps going through it. But that applies all the way down to the front level of the organization, right? Like, we're all looking for the same thing. Depending where we're at, like, a big part of this program was levels of work and where people fit in there, right? And situational leadership comes up a lot through this program. Like, we got to meet people where they are and tie it all together. So it definitely, like, all this ties straight down to the frontline associate, right? And even at that point, we're developing them to be future leaders.
Yeah, we want them to develop and become the next generation of in 10, 20 years and be able to grow into their roles, grow into their careers.
Yeah. Yeah. So Molly, I pulled a couple statistics. So I always love pulling stats.
Yes, I love it. You're always good for the numbers, Jim.
These are a couple that stood out to me. Before we get into it, this is why we want high performing teams. So, like, in the last 15 years, there's definitely a transition to collaborative work, right? Teams are needed. Everything's changing so quickly. But 21% are connected teams, right? So high performing teams will basically produce 21% increase in profitability compared to just a normal team, right? And we'll get into what the difference is. But some of the benefits there is you get 41% less absenteeism, you get 59% less turnover, right? A lot of money tied to turnover.
Yeah.
66% increase in employee wellness. So that's a big one, right? A lot of organizations are focused on the health of their employees, an all-encompassing perspective. 37% that are on a high-performing team say that that's the primary reason they stay with an organization. But here's the one that really stood out for me. So 75% of all cross-functional teams, and that's really what's going on in many, many industries, are dysfunctional. Right. So we get into Patrick Lencioni's book, Five Dysfunctions of the Team. It's a big part of this chapter, but you got to know we're not just throwing together people, right? There's a lot into building a high performing team.
That's a high level of dysfunction that's happening.
It's a lot, right? Yeah.
I mean, and I don't want to say I'm surprised by it, but it probably tracks. I mean, especially when you talk to your, I don't want to say our colleagues, but when I talk to friends who are part of other organizations, and you hear about the dysfunction, it's like, oh, it's everywhere.
Oh, it's everywhere, right?
It's not just us. It's not just them. Like, and I have said this on every podcast that I think I've been on. I did one with Jay recently. You know, we are always constantly practicing what we preach here, right? So, like, the things that we are talking about and things that we are coaching and teaching to, we are working on here at NCG as well. So we don't put ourselves on a pedestal being like the perfect, like, you know, knowing all, doing all right. I mean, I think that's why it's so great to have these conversations, because we are in it ourselves and we can recognize when, like, oh yeah, that was dysfunction. That wasn't communicated properly.
Right.
I mean, so I think we're all just trying to be better here, and that's why we do what we do.
It'll come through in the material we go over, but like vulnerability, right? Like, do you have the self-awareness and the vulnerability to say, all right, I could have did that better. And that's where you build trust with your team. Mm-hmm. When you instead of someone coming to you saying, hey, you could have did that better, you already recognized it and said, all right, I could have did that better. It impacted this person this way, right?
The level of respect that you gain by being vulnerable too, and owning up to and holding accountability for things, I mean, it goes far beyond it fixing what the issue was. You've made up so much ground that way.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely.
So there's a quote here that's in the chapter, and it comes from Lee Iacocca. And I was ashamed to admit I knew his name, but I didn't really know what Lee did. Jim has since educated me on that, but I would imagine some of our listeners will know Lee. But his quote says, "In the end, all business operations can be reduced to three words: people, product, and profit. People come first. Unless you have a good team, you cannot do much with the other two." I mean, that's a mic drop.
That is. I mean, he's
a great quote.
We were talking. I definitely outdate you, Molly. So don't feel bad about not knowing him. I mean, it's even almost out of my era a little bit.
Yeah. But,
listen, he's accredited for developing the Ford Mustang, led Ford through many good years. Then he went to Chrysler, pulled him out of bankruptcy, right? So, like, you got to give the guy some credibility, right? Like, you don't, one guy just doesn't do that, to move organizations that large and turn them around. He obviously knows something about developing high-performing teams. And he repetitively pops up in a lot of books, a lot of different readings. But yeah, it's a great quote, right? But let's not move beyond the people. Like, a lot of us have great products, right? All of us want to make money,
yep.
But like, it goes nowhere without step one, and it's the people, right? And I always think, like, even people in our network, like, if you ask them how they scale to be, if they went from, like, to say 3 million to 10 million, they're going to tell you that they built a team and got the right people in the right seats.
100%.
And yeah.
Heard that so many times.
Right. For sure.
Yep.
And it's great because I have a lot of newer clients, and like, they're in that world of adding people. And again, I love the light bulbs go off. They're like, wow, all right, my life's getting easier. I can focus on more important things. So really important.
But that can also be, what's interesting, and I'm sure you come across this within your conversations, finding those good people is not easy, one, but finding those people and getting and hiring them is an investment. And sometimes it can feel risky at the time, but for where you're looking to go, you have to match that with the level of people that can help you get there. So I'm sure you're having conversations around, you know, it's the right time to invest in a operations manager, because for you to get from A to B, this role has to be in play and it has to be a well-oiled machine. But it's hard to get past that sometimes.
Absolutely. I have four clients right now looking for ops managers, right?
Four. Okay.
It is the difference between them being successful or not. It really is. So, like, one, they had the wrong person in the wrong seat, right? And this ops manager could not allow them to go from three field teams to four, mm-hmm. right? And this is an industry where their average sales is like $40,000. That's significant, right? And that yeah. was a constraint for them, right? The other ones, it's the same thing. Like, they just plateaued. And it's not even about the growth and the profitability, but it's like, they're in the hourglass. Like, you need that person that is going to, like, it's almost like a glue between those levels. Like I said, like, between the owner and frontline, that just keeps a good cadence of communication and mm-hmm. holding standards and processes and accountability. Yeah, for sure.
But so we a need lot our of people.
Our clients are getting there.
Yeah. So we need people, and with people, we need to build something. We need to build a team. So let's define a team first, and then the common misuses of a team. What defines a team, Jim, in the broad scheme of things?
So we have different teams, right?
Different
so
types like, of teams. Ah, types that's of where. Teams. Okay.
There's different definitions, but like most of our heads go to, all right, it's a group of people working together.
Yeah.
Right. It's amazing. I mean, this ties to the business world. It ties to sports, right? How many times have you ever watched a sporting event And like just basketball, for example, like they're cohesive. It's fast paced. They know where that guy's going. You know, I love the term. I always heard Tom Brady say and Aaron Rodgers that everything in their world is slowed down, right? Which makes you execute better. So like in our world, if we have the right team high performing, it seems like things are slowing down. Like people are anticipating moves and making decisions. But then there's teams where there's none of that, right? And that's kind
And
of what
those are the
critical.
ones that often aren't making the playoffs.
Now, so like, common misuse of a team is like, hey, we need to brainstorm this. Let's get some creativity going. Let's get these five people together, right? That's not a team, right? It's really just brainstorming, right?
Okay, yeah.
These make me think of like college. You ever work in a group in college? And
Oh God, I knew you were going there because
yeah.
I have some really like horrific nightmares of not even college days, Jim, of like silly middle school, of being in a science class and being put on a lab team with people who you're like, I'm always going to be the one doing the work here. Like I've got
Yeah.
slacker A and slacker B who are like, why? This is not a team. We're not high performing here. We're not all bringing
Right.
cohesiveness.
So you and you said it earlier when you're out with your friends and stuff and you hear them saying things, right? Like in my own household, I hear like my children are getting older. They come home from work and I hear them saying stuff and I'm just like, all right, you know what I mean? Like this guy don't do this, or like
Yeah.
I have to get this done. And I always think of like school because you have these deadlines and like a lot of it is like groups now, cohorts, and you got to work together. So like authoring reports and developing presentations, right? In that world, it's like, hey, Molly, you take the first two pages, I'll take the second. Then you go off and you start developing material and like you try to put it together. And then like your professor just shreds it because he's like, this don't make any sense, right? You just submitted it. So, and then they're just being team in name only, right? Like a lot of people think, hey, we're a team. I'm a part of that team. It's depending on what we do, it goes to a whole new level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's many types of teams. What we want is a high performing team. So Jim, what is the definition of a high performing team?
Yeah, so definitely gives you an advantage over every other team, but it's where each member offers innovative ideas. They can use their talents and offer their viewpoints and perspectives. The biggest advantage is that like there's predictability there, right? Like that team is going to execute on strategy. They're going to meet goals. They need very little oversight. They're empowered to make decisions. Because they're responsible for like their functional activities, but they're also accountable for their results. So a high performing team, it's like, like we're on a high performing team. It's like Grand Summit, for example. Like I know my deliverables, right? Like I know that if I don't get things done, I'm holding up somebody, right? In this case, probably your team, and getting things ready before they're all flying out and getting ready to host clients, you know what I mean? So
Absolutely.
like it's so that's a high performing team, having all that in mind, being respectful. You mentioned that earlier, like being respectful. Like if I'm running late, I'm gonna make someone else run late, right? And that's a problem.
Yeah, it's having an understanding of your impact on other people's mission and commitment to get things done. I mean, it's a full understanding of all the roles that we play, which this I think I'm totally skipping ahead here, but this just makes me think about why we talk about the hire slow, fire fast, right? And that and I put that in quotes because there's obviously exceptions to some rules, but the concept is if you are functioning, if your organization is functioning in a high performing team, and if that definition refers to people who are committed to the mission, committed to being strategic, committed to working together, committed to the process, like committed to each other to like find success, you don't want to bring in somebody who's just gonna shake that boat and create chaos in like the in the machine that you are functioning through. It's almost that that's why we interview, because we interview for somebody who's going to fit within the requirements of our high performing team, right?
Yeah, no, there's a lot there. I mean, that's why we do DISC. That's why we do different assessments, yeah. Right? Like yeah. The sales insights is very popular right now because getting the right sales representative is, you know, even aside from the dollar value of lost training and lost opportunity in sales, it could be a culture hit, right? The bottom line is like, even every time you add someone, fire somebody to the team, it's a new team. It's a brand new team. So we'll get into those four stages, but like Jim Bradley comes on to Nolan Consulting Group, like they have to learn to interact with me. I have to learn to interact with them. We got to learn each other's ways. You're going through that whole four stage process again. Yeah. Every time you add some, right? So like
we brought on Jay. Now we got a new team with Jay.
Right. So doing your due diligence before the hire. Oh man, that is probably like 95% of the legwork.
Yeah.
Right. You got to feel good about it because the impact has a ripple effect if it's wrong.
It does. And well, the other flip side of it is, you know, interviewing back to the candidate. Are you committed to the way that we operate in this high performing team? This is how we run. And I think that's maybe part of the team member contract. But yes. That shows the, like, that brings us back to like, let's interview each other. Like, are you prepared? Do you want to be a part of this? Cause you can say no, this might not be the right environment for you. And that's okay. But let's figure that out at the beginning before we're 6 months in.
No, and that should be one of your where a flag goes up. If you don't, as an employer interviewing, if you don't feel like you're being interviewed as the employer, that should be like a little bit of a flag should go up for you that, all right, this person, I don't know how serious they are about this.
Yes. You know, always come prepared with questions if you are, if you're interviewing. So there's so much content in this chapter, and we obviously can't get to all of it in this conversation. But a couple areas that I wanted to hit. I mean, one, there's a breakdown between like what real teams are, like real high performing teams are versus working groups. And it's really helpful to see that kind of comparison, because I think it really helps us identify maybe teams that we've been on in the past and, oh, that actually wasn't really a team. We may have called ourselves that, but we didn't hit the requirements of what makes a team function versus having, let's see, discuss, decide, and do real work is on a real team. A working group is discuss, decide, and delegate.
Yeah. So, sorry, go ahead.
No, that I was going to do another one, but if you have something to elaborate on that, please.
Yeah, no, a working group is a group of people, right? They have a defined leader, that's making decisions, right? They are like, I have this responsibility. I delivered my part and you guys did not, right? So like, again, I like using sports, but the World Series, there could be a player that hits three home runs. Right. And like, he could be like, I did my part. The rest of the team that carried their load. Right. Or a basketball player scores 50 points. Mm-hmm. Right. Sometimes you hear those guys like, I don't know what else I could have did or something like that. Instead of saying, hey, we had a bad night. We're going to see where we can improve, you know? So that's a difference between like a high performance member and a work group.
Like full team accountability, not just
full team accountability, right? Like we all lost. We all failed. We all have this opportunity to get better, right? It's not about the individual.
Yeah. Sports are a really great, you know, a good sample to kind of always bring in here because we all see it. It's in front of us on whether, you know, in live or on the TV, and we can actually see these things in action.
One of the big things between that, like a real team, a high performing team, and like to say a work group.
Yeah.
When you get into the material, it's like, hey, they look forward to working together. They laugh a lot. They can't wait to be together, right? We're on the opposite of a working group. They're just showing up and doing the work.
Right. Dragging their feet.
Yeah.
Have to be there. Yeah, it's true. I mean, here at NCG, we're all split a couple days in the office, a couple days at home. I think each provide me with different benefits. Being at home allows me to do some kind of focus on things, but being in the office also allows me to like have really good interconnection and get to know my colleagues on a better level. And helps us work together at the end of the day because it helps me better understand the full person. And that's to me, that's a team. Like Absolutely. When we're connecting, we're connecting on more than just what the task is. We're connecting on a deeper level.
Yeah. And like, there's a lot of laughs. Like,
there's a lot of laughs.
Like it's fun in there, right? Like, someone's always saying something funny or,
yeah,
you know, so, but that's part of it. That's part of it. Like
it is
just feeling safe with each other to be able to mess around.
Yeah. And you need that levity sometimes when things get really get stressful and serious. Having a little bit of that levity at times really, really helps.
Yeah.
All right. So characteristics of an effective team. There's many different team traits that you all say and things that say hit. And we won't be able to go through all of them, but there's a couple here that I really wanted to call out. And the main part of it is you talk about that the key is spotting these characteristics and knowing that these are what we're looking for and isolating them in like specific examples and specific ways to then train current employees and then to identify them in future hires to achieve overall better teamwork. And yes, of course, we often know what we're looking to train for or to hire for, but there are some additional ones here that I don't think come straight to mind. A couple of them being, let's start off with inclusive thinking. What does inclusive thinking mean, Jim?
Yeah, so think about systems thinking, right? Being collaborative, open, exploratory. We got a group of people and I often use the term ping. I like to ping everybody, right? Like, so we got to be mindful that people aren't just going to come out and offer their thoughts. So we need to mine in a little bit as a leader, right? Like, so like, if you see someone being quiet or they don't offer information, right? Like, you have to solicit it. You got to make them feel comfortable, vulnerable to tell you, you know, because like the truth is we all have blind spots. Mm-hmm. And people see those blind spots, and we need them to tell us about it, right? So like getting it to the point where everybody feels good about offering their thoughts or their perspective, right? Because groupthink will kill everything, right? If everybody's just like, hey, I'm going to go along with it, or like, sounds good to me, you know, that will really make a company stagnant in everything that they're trying to do.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple other ones I'll mention. I mean, we've got obviously healthy conflict, communication, personal excellence. I love this one because I feel like that speaks to, while we don't say I in a team, we all are working individually to be the best at what we do, right? And being the best at what we do contributes to the best of the team. And so I feel like that maybe doesn't always come up in like, I don't know, just that definition of personal excellence just stood out to me a little bit more than I've seen it before.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a culture, right? Culture of excellence amongst everyone. Do you have drive?
Yeah.
Right. Do we have that internalistic, externalistic drive to go, like, if I know I'm working on something and a high performance team, a cohesive team, I know I have some responsibilities and accountability. I am doing work outside of that environment, that team when they're together, trying to get better at or like do research or bring something to the table that will move the team's objective forward as we work together, right? So personal excellence, that there's a lot in there, right? Like in that you talk about, like as we're hiring, we're constantly evaluating our talent, where we should be, constantly saying, hey, is this a teachable moment for this person? where's a gap that I need to, like, succession planning is a big deal, right? If we want to keep growing and, you know, but that personal excellence part, recognizing that is a big deal, because you can't teach that, right? You can influence that behavior.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a bit of a journey getting them to where the rest of the members of a high performing team are.
Yeah.
So that's a big one, right? Personal excellence.
You know? Well, I think that there's other things in here that people can learn. They can learn how to help have healthy conflict. They can learn how to work on their adaptability skills. They can learn how to be a better decision maker. I mean, those are things that with the right drive, with the right motivation and desire to learn, we can teach some of those things, but some do just have to be a little bit more innate.
No, exactly right, Molly. Like, a lot of this management training series is the tools you can use to be a better decision maker, right?
Yeah.
We have a variety of tools in our library, decision matrix, just different things, the lean stuff, mm-hmm. with the MAIC, and how to approach a different way of problem solving. They're tools. You can learn that stuff.
Yeah.
Right. Very easily. A lot of training can push you forward. But personal excellence is something like, I often say with that, it's like being around the right people is what will groom somebody to become someone like that. Like, so like, you know, you ever hear someone say, like, surround yourself with the right group of people.
Yes.
So like, highly successful people are surrounded by highly successful people. You know, there's a direct link there, right?
Yeah.
And they learn those behaviors.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So don't be afraid to put yourself in a group of maybe people you look up to. Like, you will become that person that others look up to by surrounding yourself with those who have a similar mindset.
Right. But you said something important too. Just say we hire somebody and it's not working out. Like, we need to recognize that quickly.
Yes.
Because it impacts the other members, right? Frustration could set in, or you could lose credibility if you sit on it too long. They're like, man, what is Jim doing? How come he don't see this? And we do.
Right.
Like, you have to, you just got to have the awareness and constantly evaluate at all times.
Well, that actually, you just brought me really nicely into this next trait that I wanted to explore with you. And that is psychological safety, which I believe speaks to a culture in which team members feel that they can speak up freely, raise issues. And if you don't feel like you can, then there's something that's a red flag there. So, I mean, that example you just were speaking to, if you have a respected leader on your team who's saying, Jim, what's going on here? Like, why is so-and-so still here? They don't meet our values. They're not performing. They're throwing out, like, the rock in the boat. And you're holding on. If that leader can't say something to you, there's no psychological safety there without feeling like there's going to be consequences for them speaking up.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the key is, like, underperforming teams lack the psychological safety. Right. So, like, my one section during the Grand Summit is on lean and mean.
Yep.
And I'm tying in what's called the theory of constraints by Eli Goldratt, right? It's like the foundation of, like, identifying constraints in your system and moving through. But, like, a key thing that he talks about in all his work is the psychological safety. There is a lot of politics in an organization. Mm-hmm. It really, really doesn't matter how big we are. We could be $1 million or we could be $42 million, but we are all navigating the political aspect of inner departments working together, cross-functional departments. The psychological safety is important because, like, is one department getting upset? Or what, estimators and paint, the field ops? How many times do we see the finger point between the two there, right? Mm-hmm. Connell and I have been speaking a lot about that.
Yeah.
You got to have psychological safety, right? Because you don't get defensive. You got to, you know, and also, like, you got to understand, it's okay to push back in certain areas, right? If you have psychological safety, your people will feel good about pushing back as well. And holding people accountable, because that's what it ultimately comes down to.
I mean, that even fits into like the safety components on a job site. There's a lot of companies who have established, and I'm forgetting the term for it, but if you feel like anybody, it's giving safety to, or it's giving the permission to anybody on the crew, if they feel unsafe on the job site, that they're able to stop the job and say,
yeah,
hold up. But that can be an intimidating thing for somebody to do. If it's an apprentice, if it's a new job leader who is afraid of repercussions of stopping the job because of a small safety thing, but it's really bothering them. If they don't have that permission that's constantly being reminded and communicated and reinforced, they're not going to say something. Hence, there's no psychological safety there.
No, exactly. Right. And that's a great example. So like, we all got to trust each other. Right. Yeah. So like, if an apprentice is blowing a whistle and saying, hey, we need to shut down this job site, I see something really not safe. Like, even though I've been there 15 years, I got to trust that this gentleman recognizes something that's not right, not sitting well with him. Right. And it's a huge opportunity for all of us. For all of us, right? Because, you know, and yet we're looking at dollars. Like, vital time is dollars out the door, especially in my world, because that's what everybody hears me talk about all the time. But like, there needs to be precedence there, right? And that's psychological safety.
Trust is a big foundation of this chapter itself. I mean, talking about, it's one of the foundations of a cohesive team, and it all starts with trust.
Right, right.
And something that I read in the chapter that says, and I actually, there's three directions of trust, three directions of trust that must exist. The team must trust the leader must trust the team, and the members of the team must trust each other. Right. I would imagine that that's not happening in every organization that we work with. I think that there's different directions of trust that are established, but other directions probably need some work.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It goes back to that vulnerability thing, right?
Yeah.
Are you approachable, right? So like in the material, like the ways to build more trust, right? The first thing it mentions is be a decent human being.
How simple.
So like, are you approachable? Or are you scaring everybody, right? Like,
yeah.
That doesn't work. Like you are hurting yourself by having that type of presentation, right? You got to be credible, right? So like, go back to an apprentice shutting down the job site for safety. What if he does it again? Everybody's going to say, well, last time he was right. We almost had a guy get hurt. Like, this guy built some credibility. Like,
yeah. Good.
We trust them, right?
Yeah.
You got to be relational, right? And like, you know, often I'll talk about like, to get that, like if I'm a leader in an organization and I want a culture of trust, I'm going to model the way, right? So like, I'm living what I'm trying to implement, right? Mm-hmm. And if you don't do that, and you're like, you say it but don't live it, people are going to see through that very easily. Right. And it's just
people can
be
call your bluff pretty easy when just by simple actions.
Right. Right.
Do you on these calls that you're doing, you know, through this management training series, you're obviously working through this content. I would imagine you've got folks sharing different stories about how, like, what they have done or things that have come up in their organization that like speak exactly to what they're wanting to work on because of these things happening. Like sharing stories.
I would say that's probably the best thing for me through this whole thing, right? Like the level of vulnerability and sharing with this group on these calls, like, and we record them all, and mm-hmm. like I'll go back and I'll watch them. It's awesome. It is awesome. Like, and I Jonathan Winters from MSE does a really good job.
Nice.
For the group, I think he set the tone because he laid himself out there a couple times. And I think he set the atmosphere for this group in this program that, like, hey, I have stories, I have things to share, much like our peer groups. Like, the field general peer groups are like that, right? Like, and it's just, you know, it's unbelievable, like, the degree of that, you know.
Those are
I mean?
My favorite kind of leaders who just kind of, you know, bear their vulnerability and feel like they you can tell off the bat that they're here to get better, that they're not, they don't claim to be perfect. They have no ego about this.
I had this week a field general peer group. One guy missed it. He was no call or no show, right? We didn't know. He sends an email out that night, like, explaining to the group why he didn't make it. And, you know, there's a lot going on at work. There's a lot going on at home. But, like, the emails from the other members to him are awesome. They're like, hey, no problem. We understand. Let us know how we can help you, right?
Oh, or, love that.
Hey, I'll give you a call tonight, right? Let me see. You know what I mean? Like, the level of care was just unbelievable. Like, yeah. I'm watching these emails and I'm like, this is pretty cool.
That's right? So cool. And what's interesting is, like, the peer group isn't necessarily a team, because, or maybe they are, maybe they're a different type of team. They're more than a work group, that's for sure, because there's a level of care there that they're wanting to show up for each other. And if they can't show up in that moment, they're holding accountability and share and being vulnerable as to why.
Yeah, there is aspects of being a high performance team there, because, like, they, and I'm sure it's like this on all the peer groups, but, like, we share best practices. Like, we all have experiences, like, you know, and, like, that's, like, they hear a pain point from a member and they're like, hey, I can help you there. This is what I did, you know? Right. And so that's, you know, there is definitely aspects there. Now, they all work in different companies. They all have different objectives they're trying to achieve, but, like, our work is the same. And that's what's great about this management series. It doesn't matter if we are painters or excavators or electricians, plumbers. Yeah. This stuff applies to all of us.
It does.
Yeah.
I know we're tight on time here, so we need to kind of wrap up. I knew we weren't going to be able to get to all of it. The one thing I just wanted to hit, I mean, obviously you talk about the stages of team development, and there's the forming and the storming and the norming and performing, and maybe that, Jim, is a whole other podcast.
Probably. I would say it probably is, right? And, you know, in a management training class or, you know, program, it was great conversation with the group through this one, because it really got their wheels turning. Like we said, where's your team fit in here?
Yeah.
Right. And where do you think you are? And, you know, it was amazing, because some were like, hey, I thought we were performing, but we're really norming.
We're still norming. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, the biggest thing there is, like, I think for all of us, we were all like, every time we add someone, it's a new team. We cycle through those stages. Yeah. There's a lot of content there, Molly, I think, for another one.
All right. We're going to dive into that further in another conversation. I think it's worthy of its own. The last thing I wanted to hit with you, we hit it just kind of towards the beginning, talking about the team member contract, and there's, like, a working agreement of bringing on new people. And this is how we operate in this environment. Andrew and I have done a conversation or a podcast on, you know, PFP and the team member contract, because they go hand in hand. But it's important to recognize that the team member contract really comes into play in the larger picture of this high performing team. And you guys talk a lot about this in this chapter.
Yeah, I mean, I love the fact that Andrew brought that into it, right? Like, it sets the table for expectations.
Yeah.
So you know that we're expecting high level. Like, our behaviors, our accountabilities of what we owe each other in the group, right? We do it with our clients. We have a contract where, like, let's be respectful of each other's time.
Yep.
Let's not cancel calls, right? Look, it's important. Or I had to do it with clients where I had to, like, hey, let me bring this up and remind you, like, you know, but we do it with our employees. Like, we see them straying away. It's like, hey, let's reel them back in. You know, remember our commitment to our team. But the documentation is powerful, right? And some people have people sign off on it, like a contract. Like, that's impactful. Like, those little things really hammer home, like, hey, you're a part of this group. And, you know, we're going to hold you accountable to deliver.
Well, what I love about the conditions of the, like the team member contract, it's, I don't know, some people may be intimidated by, we operate at a high level here. So like, and that can be maybe scary for someone who's like, well, I don't know what that means, what's going to be expected of me. But when you look at the conditions of the team member contract, a couple of being, let's see, I will come to work every day and do my best. I will work and interact in a friendly way. That shouldn't be very hard.
No.
While doing my best, I will help others on the team, participate in training, and aid with others whenever necessary. If while doing my best, my work does not meet the quality standard, I will let my manager know as soon as possible. I mean, those to me are giving permissions to team members that, hey, if we're struggling, this is my permission to say, hey, I need help.
Right.
Because if we are not a high-performing team, if we can't communicate to each other when things are going awry in fear of my job is going to be at risk. And maybe if you're not hitting these expectations across the board and it's happening repeatedly, then maybe there's a larger issue here. But this kind of just sets the tone of this is the rules of the game. This is how we work together. And I think it's great to have people sign off on it.
No, it really is. You touched on the one part where, like, a high performing team, members aren't going to tolerate people that are falling off.
No.
Like, they'll give some grace. They'll give some grace, but eventually they're going to come for you.
Yeah.
And they're going to hold you accountable, right?
Yeah.
So setting the table with that agreement, using it as a compass point. If someone falls off, I got a lot going on at home, I'm overwhelmed at work. It's like, you can use that as a tool to bring them back.
Yep.
And they probably would really appreciate that, right? Because they got so much going on.
Yeah. And oftentimes it shows you that your manager cares, that you're kind of sitting them down. And again, we're big on wanting to understand the full person and how they're showing up to work. There's oftentimes when things aren't going well at work, it can be often because things are not going well at home. And that we need to know that as managers, right?
Right.
We want to know, we want to take that into consideration. We want to provide grace when necessary. We want to be able to help when we can. But that's what part of being a team is. You pick up where others might not be able to in that moment on a temporary basis.
Yeah, you bridge the gap.
Right, bridge the gap.
All goes back to trust. As a manager, are they going to trust me to share that stuff with me? Because I'm the one that can really help them or take some pressure off of them to deal with what they have going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, it all goes full circle. It's incredible.
Kind of comes back a little bit to servant leadership.
Yeah.
Sometimes, like, as leaders, you need to just, you got to get right down there with them and help make sure they understand that you're all on the same team. You're all trying to work towards the same goal.
Right.
Jim, thank you so much. This was lovely. I'm sorry we've gone over time here, but there's so much that you can kind of peel back on this topic. And clearly we just pulled out a couple more future conversations to have. We'll be talking about forming, storming, norming, and performing on a future episode.
No, absolutely. And you know, there's five other chapters in that management.
Aye. All right. So we got a lot.
There's a lot of material. Yeah. And you know, the good part is you get Andrew involved too.
Yes, like, we will. We will.
Yeah.
He loves to talk about this stuff. We will definitely get Andrew involved. Jim, thank you so much. Appreciate your time as always. And until the next one.
Yeah, I was happy to be back, Molly. Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
A lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Out of the Hourglass is recorded and produced by the team at Nolan Consulting Group, a nationwide business coaching and consulting firm with coaches located throughout the country. Have a question, comment, or idea for future episodes? We'd love to hear from you. Visit our website, www.nolandcg.com.